Losing a loved one is tragic and affects life in deep and permanent ways. How can we understand and make meaning of these experiences? I'm your host, Dr. Rich Hoffman, and on this episode of Ask Christian Counseling Associates, join me to hear a story of grief and loss from a young man's perspective with guest Alexander Petrie from Charter Oak Church in Greensburg, PA. Hey, Alex. Thanks for being with us today.
Great to be here.
Okay, so this is a little bit different than some of the guests that we have on the podcast. Alex is a friend of mine. I'm friends with his family, and we're in small group together. Mm-hmm. So every other Saturday we meet, and so we know each other's stories. I wanted to talk about some of that today because some of the things that we go through, a lot of people who come to counseling also specifically come here because some of the things that we've shared. And so I believe that you have a real important story, and we just have a lot to talk about all the time. So, you know, it's good to have, a couple hours to speak with you and share together today. So, so where would you like to start? Do you want to tell people about anything, about you, about your life and,
I think the best place for me to start with is how much God has changed me. And I just want to just start with God has really guided me over the last couple years. Okay. And
when did you make a decision to be a Christian?
Honestly, I was always going to church my entire life. I was raised in the church. Okay. But I truly came to Christ, I want to say 2 years ago, truly. Okay. It's when I started picking up the Bible. That's when I started listening to this podcast.
You listen to the podcast?
Yeah,
that's
good. Listen to the podcast. I listen up and watch YouTube videos and even sermons. And
now, for the audience, you are 22 years old. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so 2 years ago at 20. And what you're saying is you're raised in a Christian home,
mm-hmm.
and it's all the way to 20 where you're making a personal decision to follow Jesus.
Yeah, and a lot of that is because of the trials that I had through life. It was really painful, and as that pain kind of built up, my desperation was just growing. As someone who is a Christian, you'd think that the first person that I would go to is Christ. That's not the case. I went through worldly seekings, and I was just like seeking all sorts of stuff in the world. Mm-hmm. And when I realized, let me go to Christ as a final desperation, that's when I realized that, that's when I came to terms that this is exactly what I should have sought first in my life.
Well, tell us about what you went through. What happened in your life that really was a major turning point?
So I say it was about in third grade. My mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. And it was really hard.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to talk about now.
Yeah, it's always going to be hard to talk about.
Yeah.
This May is 10 years since she passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I was 12 years old, sixth grade, when she died. And it was hard.
Yeah. Can you describe what that was like for you?
When she was diagnosed with cancer in third grade, I didn't think much about the seriousness. I was just kind of just shrugging it off. I thought it was no more than an average sickness. I was young. So mm-hmm. I didn't really understand how serious cancer truly was.
Mm-hmm.
But
Do you remember how you were told or when the first time you found out that your mom was sick.
It's honestly a blur because a lot of the aftermath of my mom's death kind of is in my memory, while things building up to that is more foggy. I don't know if you know what I'm talking like.
It sort of gets lost in the
details. Yeah, it gets lost because I focus more on the aftermath rather than the.
Yeah, it's peculiar what stands out and what mm-hmm. you remember. It sometimes doesn't make sense to people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a period in time when she was going through chemo treatment, and the cancer like disappeared or something. They did surgery on her breast, and the cancer was gone for at least like a year. There was no pickup or register of it from what I remember, but it came back, and when it came back, it wasn't near her breast. It was actually on her neck. And yeah, it was scary. You know, I was scared.
You remember when she was told that she had her growth come back?
Yeah, I remember when she was freaking out. It was in the kitchen, and I remember her saying that it was like the size of a golf ball.
Oh my.
Yeah, I remember her saying that.
Yeah. Yeah, it must have been very scary to her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you were watching that happen too.
Yeah, and there was all sorts of chaos in the family. And, like, division between, like, our family and cousins and aunts and uncles.
Mm-hmm. Anything stand out to you about those things that were happening?
People were not happy. They weren't in the right mindset. And I view that as the devil trying to interfere.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to break things up. That's not the case today. I think our family is starting to mend again.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really difficult.
Okay. So even though this was 10 years ago, and the events leading up to your mom's passing away, you know, years of people upset, and it caused division.
Yeah, it was stress. You know, people were just stressed.
Mm-hmm. Anything specific that you know that you would be able to remember that is difficult for you even today?
So after she found out she had the lump in her neck, they did surgery on her neck region. And she told me after the surgery that she will not be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I, from what I remember, I didn't really think much of how different she would truly be. But as an outcome to that, like, her voice was like slurred. Like, she knew what she wanted to say. She remembered everybody, but she had like, she couldn't really speak. She only spoke in like mumbles or groans. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't walk. She was in a wheelchair. She needed assistance from my dad to have her go to and from the therapy to help her walk and all sorts of stuff. She would be in and out of the house constantly for like, I want to say like a year, maybe 6 months. And it was just, it was a struggle.
Yeah, I can only imagine, you know, from how you describe your mom saying, you know, things are going to really be different. And then when she returns home, it's dramatically different.
Mm-hmm.
That the person that you knew as your mom had changed dramatically.
Yeah. And she had a medical bed in the living room, and she would actually sleep in the living room. And there would be moments where I would lay next to her and
My love for her never changed. Mm-hmm. But it was hard to watch.
Yes.
My dad, he really helped my mom through the struggles. Like I said, she was in a wheelchair. So a bunch of my dad's friends from the church and he himself, they made a sidewalk in the front yard. And I want to say this front yard was like 30 yards. Like, it was a big front yard. We had no backyard whatsoever.
It was a major project.
It was just a big front yard. And they spent like, I don't know how long, I can't remember, but to me it felt like a month. Like, it felt forever. But they dug this sidewalk, like, they dug the dirt up, made this sidewalk. They textured it. They really put a lot of effort into it. And it's me witnessing what my dad did for my mom that I understand what it means to love a spouse. It's like you sacrifice your day, your time, just to benefit the other person.
Yeah, for how sick she must have been at that point and all the things that had to happen. You know, it's symbolized by this big sidewalk that they had to put in. Must have taken hours and hours, and people coming together to do that.
Yeah.
And those kind of things, I imagine, happened on a regular basis when somebody's that sick.
My dad was, he was out of the house so much that I want to say at least once a week that people from the church would come to our house and have this tray of food. Like, they'd spend time out of their day to be a Christian, to show us that they love us. And to me, that's like the perfect definition of what it means to be a disciple of Christ, just to take the time to help someone else in need who is in desperate need of care.
Yeah, so you remember people who would take time out and noticed what was happening and was caring about those things. That witness was something you remember fondly.
Yeah. After my mom passed away, I started getting into piano. And piano was a way for me to cope my feelings, to put stuff to my ears, you know, music to my ears, you know. And that was my way to cope.
Wow.
Yeah.
So maybe you wouldn't have started playing the piano if all of this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. Originally, my dad bought the piano because he wanted to learn, because I'm assuming he wanted to pick up a new hobby after my mom passed away so he could cope. But he then realized that I had more of the want to play piano, and I asked him if I could play it, and he said, yeah, sure, go for it.
Yeah, I didn't know you played the piano, but I see you on social media playing the guitar.
Yeah, I don't play piano that much anymore.
Okay, but so that was for a time?
That was for a time.
And led to playing other types of music like the guitar and taking interest in that. So part of the process of losing your mom was things changing in your life. I mean, it influenced you, I would imagine, in every way. There were some positive things, like things you saw people doing, making good decisions, like, you know, a way to get through this was learning how to play the piano. A lot of times people have negative things that happen too.
Yeah.
You know, not only just in the pain that it's obvious that, you know, it's painful to talk about, but, you know, decisions people make to try to do something with that pain. Was there things like that for you?
Yes. So, like I said, I went to like these worldly desires. I didn't go to God first, and I watched porn. I started watching porn, and I watched it for years. And for me, that was a way for me to have sort of a temporary way of feeling satisfied, feeling good. And it was just a way for me to cope. And I just tried to find shortcuts. The devil really wants you to go through these shortcuts of coping, and they would be in ways that would not be going to God. So I tried to just do what everybody viewed was popular. And, you know, it's just...
That was popular.
Yeah.
So what age does that start, and how does that start for you? You know, there's plenty of people just... I'm assuming that everybody knows how to access every type of media.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but maybe not. You know, it probably would be helpful to talk about how somebody who's raised in a Christian household, you know, would start to access something like that.
Well, I didn't have a cell phone until I was like 15 years old.
Wow. Yeah. Usually now it's like 9 or 10 or.
Yeah. My dad really disciplined me a little bit, made sure that I was a
good for him.
Good kid. You know, but I did have like a sort of tablet or something. It wasn't in any way for me to access, you know, calls or social media or anything. I typically just used it to play video games.
Okay. So you're playing video games on the tablet.
Yeah, I played video games and I watched.
How old were you when you started on the tablet?
I want to say like 10 years old, maybe 11.
So this is right along the time all this stuff is happening.
Yeah. And that's how I started watching porn. I'd look stuff up and just...
It was just freely accessible.
It was accessible.
Through the internet.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would imagine nobody else would know that that was happening. I mean, you could see that, get that off the tablet.
I tried hiding it. You know, I honestly, I think I did a pretty good job at hiding it. Nobody really questioned or knew anything about it. But if it needs to be hidden, if you need to hide it from your parents, then it's not good for you.
Sure. You knew that it wasn't good.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't good. Parts of me felt stressed just watching it. Like, what would my dad think if I was watching porn? But it was just a way for me to just cope through the struggles and...
Now that's something different, you know, that looking through this from a Christian lens, there would be assumption. I feel guilty about it. Therefore, this is a signal that this is not good. This is not going to build up my life. And I would just mention that as somebody who has a PhD in counseling, I graduated from Duquesne University. Mm-hmm. There was always a debate, especially in the higher levels of education, but even straight from a time that I went to college, you know, in the psychology departments, that maybe pornography was something that was good.
Oh, maybe. I hear that all the time.
Do you?
Okay. Yeah, it's a way to relieve stress. You know, it's
as long, you know, it's harmless, and as long as the person, you know, they enjoy it, and then there's
But like I said, it built a sort of stress, but it made me feel good. So it was kind of like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And my position has always been, because I always looked at this, you know, through a Christian way, you know, that you are sexualizing, you know, an image of another person. And, you know, we're clearly told that that is against God's design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that that kind of relationship is to be real between a man and a woman in marriage. And so if we start there, there's no way that this can lead to something that is good. And I would share that with, you know, in academic circles. And even though there was a lot of research,
which means, you know, probably 10, 15 years ago, there was a, back when people used to read Time magazine, mm-hmm. they, you know, had pornography, you know, as a cover issue to say that, that, look, this is really damaging. We've known this. And even still, you know, psychology and academics would argue about it, even make it an approach for marriage counseling that we, you know, they'd want their counselors to give or prescribe, you know, pornographic activities.
It's just
you know, I don't know how that sounds to you, you know, maybe hopefully not experiencing that in school, but you know, if there was something damaging for you that came out of that, you know, because I don't know how long that went on. You know, what were the consequences of all of that?
I was seeking people for the wrong reasons. And it was just, I wasn't looking for somebody in a godly image. Like, I wasn't really looking for somebody who was, per se, like a Christian or really disciplined and obedient towards God. I was just looking for somebody who loved me. Just loved me in general. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter what their sexual feelings were towards me or me towards them. It was just, if they love me in similar ways that just remind me of my childhood, I guess you'd call it. Because I just felt very broken, very damaged in my childhood. And all I wanted was to just be loved.
So would it be accurate to say that it was like anybody who would show you affection?
Yeah, I just wanted, you know, affection and just all out, just love.
So it sensitized you to that in some way? And
yeah, in some way. My view definitely changed over time. I can strongly say right now that that's not what I seek anymore. I most certainly seek Christ and what Christ wants for me. I want something that will benefit, you know, a family of my own one day, benefit children, my children in the future. And
so in a way, are you saying that you're just not searching for anybody who will give you affection? You're searching for somebody who would develop a stable relationship with you.
Yes, I stopped searching for this temporary sort of love, you know, this affection, and I really want to focus on long-term stuff. I want to focus on what will benefit the kingdom of God in the future, not just my own desires, but what will bring people into discipleship. I want to have my children be that of God. I want to have a wife that is faithful and built on Christ, and above all things, have it be a foundation of Christ and have it be some sort of like gratification towards God.
What you're saying is really important,
yeah,
because that it's very traditional, you know, those values that, you know, a mom and a dad, you know, before you show you what a family is to be like through their marriage, and you know, and makes you want to grow up and do the same thing, become mm-hmm. a man who meets a woman who can be in marriage and build a family, experience everything, you know. But there's these things that are within that, you know, that are very important, that can't be compromised. And I guess I would say that, you know, in this instance, it sounds like losing your mom like really shook that up and sort
really,
of made it skewed towards like, I just want some affection.
Yeah, it really took me off the rails. Like, is
yeah. And that's so important to realize, you know, people who are grieving, they don't always, they can't always pinpoint like, wow, something really like this is a form of me being hurt through this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, anybody that you're connected to, but somebody so foundational as your mom and your dad, losing them is has a huge impact.
Yeah, and in not having a proper mom and a dad in a home for a short while. My dad did get remarried, but I feel like not being aware of the affection towards my biological mom and my biological dad and them together, it kind of skewed what it truly meant to be a Christ-built family. I guess you can call it that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it really didn't give you the opportunity
to experience it.
Yeah. So sometimes it's one thing that lets people know, like, wow, that's messed up, you know, where you discover that kind of issue, or one relationship, you know, where you really just come to grips with, man, you know, I can't do this anymore. Was there something like that for you?
It's probably my most recent ex. We fooled around, we had sex, and it felt good for the time being, but she was not someone of Christ.
She wasn't in the church.
She wasn't in the church. She went because I went, but she said she didn't go to church or acknowledged the Bible or anything like that, and she ended up cheating on me, and it really threw a wake-up call on me, and it made me think that these temporary satisfactions, these temporary benefits, they're just as easily broken as Satan desires them to be. You know, Satan wants to destroy it in similar ways that divided my family and all sorts of stuff like that.
Well, you know, and again, to remind people listening that we know each other, you know, for years. I'm good friends with your dad. We worked together, you know, and I remember this. You know, you called me.
Yeah,
it's like out of the blue.
I called you out of the blue. I was crying.
Yeah, and you know, we never talked that way, you know, but I was so impressed that you would have the courage to do that, and you know, was really like changed the way that you know, I saw your whole family. Like wow, how did Alex pull this off, that he would reach out to me like this?
I was desperate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I. You know,
you know, and to be truthful, like, you know, when anybody, you know, is coming to counseling with me, you know, I just want it to be a moment where I can help somebody, and you know, with you and being friends with your family, I just so hope that you reaching out to me, like I could do something to help you through that, and you know, to my memory, we talked a couple of times. And, you know, I started to lead you into being, like, into the church, seeking ministry, and you really followed through with that.
Yeah.
You know, and you're describing something now that might be rocking people's worlds, you know, which is, I mean, you might be thinking, like, wow, I'm talking about some bad choices that I've made, but you're also talking about a design for relationship. You're saying, I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, and I want to meet somebody who's a believer. And that matters to me. I don't want to compromise that. That's part of the design of how it's going to work in my future marriage. So you're talking about, at age 22, you're talking about marriage and something that you're looking for. And I just want to guarantee you that is so different than a lot of people who are 22.
Hello, I'm David Collins with Christian Counseling Associates, in particular the Foundation for Christian Counseling. I'm also a licensed professional counselor. Just talk to you a minute about what the Foundation does and what we can provide. You know, we strengthen the local communities, the families. We create this foundation. We do that through supporting marriages and marriage tune-up. We do that through supporting individuals in parenting and Christian active parenting. We also our community support, and obviously each of those people are located in the community, and so we seek to connect those folks with our partner churches. We really engage with helping people in those times, in those floods of their life where they're in crisis, and that crisis we help to point them, we help to shine a light towards the foundation, the rock that is Christ. We really seek and aim to meet those people in crisis, to let them know that we care, that there's a way forward, that we can keep things accessible as far as support and help through the particular foundation grants that we offer. And that is just a bit about the vision and the mission that Foundation for Christian Counseling is after. Your giving transforms communities one family at a time.
So that's probably rocking people's worlds, you know, because there's this thing like, wow, we should just trust for all that to work out, you know, and you're saying that you really, your goal is to find someone who matches up on the core beliefs that you have.
Yes.
And who's in the church, and you know that is part of the design of a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And a Christian marriage. And that's really, you know, your mom and your dad, what they had.
Yeah, it's really hard to find a good woman these days. A lot of them kind of skew off in their own desires and path. And
yeah.
In the Bible, it says that you need to be evenly yoked, and you need to have someone who is just as ready as you are. And I'm still searching for that specific partner.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is a tough thing for people, young adults, to talk about. But what we know is that people are getting married way later now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so they're staying in relationships that are not committed. You know, a lot of times living together, a lot of times developing multiple partners, you know, before they get married. And yeah, I think the average age is like 34.
Really?
Yeah.
And oh, wow.
it's old. You know, that you get to 34, it's way late to get started on building a family.
Do you think a part of the reason is because people are maturing a lot later in life? Or?
I think that I've always said that in the church, And in society, it's not too much different, and we don't talk about it. But it's like we want people, and this is changing now. You chose not to go to college.
Yeah, I actually did, but I dropped out and
realized that wasn't the path.
That wasn't the path.
You know, you have a solid job. Mm-hmm. You have your own house at 22.
Yeah,
you're earning good money.
Mm-hmm.
And you work in industry.
Yes.
You make things.
Yep. I make rubber for train locomotive brakes, and I get paid decent. You know, I get paid good. But this all happened and occurred after I came to Christ over the last couple years.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just,
it all come together that
yeah,
way.
Yeah. I think God wanted me to have this sort of wake up call, and as soon as I kind of just gave myself over to him, he kind of helped me through the you know, traffic jam.
Yeah. So nowadays, you know, people are discovering that there's jobs available, skilled jobs, mm-hmm. that pay more than, you know, somebody with a bachelor's degree in college. And that was the way it was, you know, when I was a kid. There was tons of industry, and you could get right out of high school and start, you know, building, you know, work experience, building wealth, starting a family. And people got married when they're 18, 19, 20. You know, I was married when I was 23. My wife, Renee, she is 20. We didn't know anybody else who was married at our age. We had no friends. You know, still to this day, I have some friends, you know, who are not married. You know, the state of marriage, you know, has been so disrupted. But one way it's been disrupted is we've told people that you have to go to college, which is now not only a bachelor's, it's at least a master's, and then you have to get a job, and you have to get a house and a car before you get married. And so, you know, how long does that take? Well, it takes an average of like being 28 or 29, which is the average age where people leave the house. So you being at 22 and having your own home, you're way ahead, you know. But the damaging thing in the church is we don't tell people how to get to 18 to 28 or to 32 without, you know, making a commitment like that. We just say, hey, you better not get married until you have all these things done. And you know, what I would imagine is people see that as impossible. That if you have normal attractions and desires, you can't hold that off until, you know, you're 32. You know, people are going to get into relationships. And I also think that that's a reason we don't have young adults a lot in the church is they do have a sense of guilt about that if they're Christians.
Yeah.
And so they just stay away. So we won't ask and they won't tell.
I also think a big part of what people interpret relationships being is not the commitment part, but they focus so much on the quality part. And they say, I want someone who's beautiful, kind, funny. And then you always get that moment, like a year. You're into the relationship for a year, and maybe their funniness isn't as funny. They might seem more annoying, or they might not be as kind as you originally thought. So your commitment drops because people view the one. You know, people say, I need to find the one. People view the one as someone whose qualities don't change or alter over time. They expect the relationship to stay the same from day one all the way to, you know, age 80,
Yeah, things change.
And it's not that the qualities is the problem. It's the commitment. People don't have the commitment anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's things that are more important than these qualities, and you're starting to realize that a lot of people don't.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me started on this because I'm a marriage expert.
Yeah.
And so I'll say a couple of things that are controversial here though, and see what you think. And these are things that I share in the church. I share professionally as an expert counselor.
Yeah.
And that is that there's no such thing as the one.
Yeah,
you know,
there is.
If you take things back a couple generations, we had like in America, what you had is pretty much semi-arranged marriages. Where, you know, people, you had, characteristics that you looked for. And a lot of people had those characteristics. And you wanted to make sure, you know, but there's so many people that you could get along with if you're the kind of person that can open his or her heart that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really unfortunate about what we do today is because we tell people not to strive to be that kind of person who can make that kind of commitment. I mean, that would be a quality. Or a characteristic, somebody who could commit for a lifetime on something.
And that's exactly what Jesus Christ is. There's a reason why Jesus Christ calls us his bride and himself the groom. And we didn't do anything in, you know, our will to help him out or just...
sacrificial giving.
Yeah, he was sacrificial. We completely destroyed his commandments and his sort of authority. We didn't listen to him. But Jesus Christ, he's all loving, and he's able to make a commitment
like
and sacrifice.
And that, you know, and sacrifice and commitment, lifetime, you know, that he makes to us is a model of how we should be with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, like so important. So, you know, those kinds of things are controversial that we would prepare people for that as soon as possible. And, you know, the other thing I would say is that part of that is admitting that, you know, you're probably prepared before 28. And, you know, I had grandparents who were married their whole lives. They got married at 18. And their marriage was solid, you know, and it was what everybody was doing, you know. So because things are the way they are economically, and you know, with you made a choice where you could get that started right away. There's still people, you know, and again, when I was growing up, not everybody went to college.
Yeah.
You know, it was just the select, you know, people realized that you had to have a certain makeup to do that. Now it's like everybody is waiting till they're like 28 to start a career. It's really not for everybody to do. I'm saying something, you know, again, that people are going to disagree with. But for that, you know, I think as adults, you know, families, we should make arrangements. Like, you know, I would tell people in my family that, look, if you chose the college route or you're working towards a career, as long as you're working, mm-hmm. you know, we will make sure that, you know, if you find that person and you're ready, and you choose to get married at 20, 22, you know, 24, we'll help you get the house.
Yeah.
We'll help you make sure that you're going to have food, clothes for everybody, you know, have the basic necessities. And, you know, your job will be to work towards that place where you can be self-sufficient. But we don't want you to wait. You know, we don't want you to pretend like, okay, you know, cut corners like that. You want to do it the right way, we'll support you in doing it the right way.
Yeah, and for the longest time, when I was, you know, watching in porn and stuff, my view was not commitment, but qualities. And I realized that as I was viewing more of the quality route, everything was going downhill. It was going all over the place. It was just a huge maze. But it wasn't until I put the quality part aside that I realized the commitment route and the long-term relationship and the sacrifices that I would give towards another partner.
Yeah.
It wasn't until then that I, you know, started going on the right track.
Yeah, yeah. So you develop these kinds of, you know, for the world, what's upside down, and you know, I wonder what people will think about listening to this. But these qualities that you talk about, I'm assuming that, you know, there were things like attractiveness, popularity, whether the person, you know, had some sort of status, versus, you know, things like, you know, what you're focused on now is I want to be a person who has the ability to commit, and I want somebody who has the ability to commit back.
Yeah,
to me.
A lot of people my age, they encourage all this sort of quality stuff. There's people that encouraged me to have sex with my ex, mm-hmm. and I guess, you know, you could say that I kind of gave in, because it was just people saying, when are you going to do it? When are you going to have intimacy with your girlfriends? And it was just...
Yeah, and they didn't describe it that way.
It felt pressured. Like, I was pressured.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, again, don't get me started, because we could do the whole segment on this. And,
yeah.
And it's an important thing for young adults, because I think that they're pressured to do it the way of the world, or there's something wrong with you, you know, or to redefine their identities if they're not going to go that way.
Yeah.
You know, so you're defining your identity on Christ. Mm-hmm. And that's obvious to me. And, you know, I would just wonder what our listeners are thinking and believing about that, to take stock. And, you know, because I know that the day you called me about that relationship, you were crushed. It was very difficult. And you knew that wasn't the way for you. You know,
yeah.
And you know, I'm sorry that you had to go through that, you know, but also, you know, I think that you got something out of that, in which you got a clear way forward, a choice, and you made it.
Yeah, God was guiding me through the ropes, and he really had me skip all of devil's traps, because I could have easily continued down this route of, let me just give up myself and towards anybody, and
yeah.
I could have went a really bad route, but
yeah, and you know, notice that people are going to listen to this and they're not going to believe it. They're going to, you know, or maybe they're sitting there and they made a different choice.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in that choice right now. You know, and so people might be, even though they don't want to admit it, they're suffering. And they maybe had something, you know, big happen in their life, like the loss that you experienced. And they got caught up in that and weren't able to get out.
Yeah.
You know, I want those people to know as they listen to this, so like what you're saying is true. Like you made a choice that was that just built your life, you know, and that you're really doing good right now. and that the people out here listening and doubting, you know, I want to say to them, you don't have to live that way. You know, and part of that is you could come here and we could work it out. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing is over. You're not stuck in anything permanently. You know, you can start deciding differently today. And wherever you're at, you can make the next right choice.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of what got me out of this trap, this whole problem of mine, is I went to a friend, and I hardly knew this kid in high school. I had him in one class, and now I consider him my best friend because I feel so easy. It feels so easy to talk to him. He knows a lot about my deepest, darkest secrets. Yeah. But I texted him when me and my ex broke up, and you could tell a lot about a person based off of how they respond. So I texted him, and he sent me like paragraphs. He sent me a paragraph, and it was very godly. I knew he was a godly person because I saw his stories on Instagram, and he was fun to talk to in high school, and I felt like he can really help me through the problems that I was facing. Yeah. And I was talking to him, and he said, "Hey, I have this radio show coming up, and it's like a podcast." That's what my friend said. He had this radio show.
He's not talking about me, folks.
No, it's not him. but my friend Ryan, I'll just say his first name. My friend Ryan had this radio show, and it was a little political, but it was very founded in Jesus Christ and in faith.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to his podcast, and a part of me just listened to it because it was someone that I knew, someone that I respected, someone who really helped me, and I just wanted to do him a favor. I just wanted to help him and acknowledge his show. And as I was listening to his podcast, there was instances I'd listen to hours of it per day. And it being political but grounded in faith, he'd make like biblical references and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
It was at that moment that Christ entered my heart, and I truly pursued Christ. And after listening to his podcast,
so you get involved in the podcast and listening.
I was listening.
Came a moment you made a decision for Christ.
Yeah, and it grew into me wanting to read the Bible, read through the Gospels, read Proverbs.
Yeah, because you make that decision, and
I make the decision, and as soon as I willingly choose to make that decision, it just continues to build, continues to grow.
Yeah.
After listening to his podcast, I was watching YouTube videos. I was watching all sorts of Christian-related YouTube videos. I listened to sermons.
Yeah.
Every so often.
Yeah. And now, you know, you come to the small group, and, you know, there's
small group.
You're the youngest guy there, except for when we have, you know, other visitors or maybe they're your age. But you know, this is all like a success story and, you know, and a testimony that I hope people will hear, you know, at 22. And I just want to, you know, check back in, you know, with where we left off, you know, because, you know, if we take this all the way back, you know, that was, you know, started out with the tablet.
Mm-hmm.
It led to, you know, poor decisions in relationship. And then there was redemption, you know, and that was one big turning point in the story of grief.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with what happened in your family, with what happened with your mom. And so, you know, I just wondered if you'd share more about, okay, you know, that's 10 to 12. How did you really deal with this in the beginning, and then where did it go from there? With the loss of your mom, because I think you shared with us that she had this tumor on her neck, and then she was really sick, and you knew that things were changing.
Yes.
Could you tell me more about what happened from there?
Yeah, I was. It was right out of sixth grade is when my mom passed away. It was May 13th, 2013.
You remember
and
the day?
Yeah, I remember the day. And just on a quick note, a lot of people view, you know, the tragedies in life. But if you go on the calendar, my mom passed away the day after Mother's Day.
Oh, my.
And a lot of people say that's tragic, but I view that as God blessing me to spend time with my mom on Mother's Day before she passes.
So you had one more Mother's Day with
yeah.
her?
Beautiful. Yeah. I view it as beautiful. And a lot of people might say, oh, that's tragic, that's awful. But I take comfort in knowing that God has given me one more day. One more Mother's Day with my mom.
I like the way you look at it.
I try to look at the positives.
Yeah, and aware that, you know, there's things that people say, you know.
Yeah.
And that was also happening, too, around mm-hmm. the loss of your mom. That people try to console you.
Yeah.
And help.
But I just want to move on to seventh grade, because this was right out of sixth grade when my mom passed away in May.
Okay, so it was sixth grade when she passed away, and then
seventh grade came. Was hard. That was probably one of the hardest, because my mom would always help me with my homework. She was the parent that would help me through school. Mm. And without a mom, I got a lot of D's and F's on my report card.
So your grades began to
slip. Yeah, they fell. Teachers didn't understand what I was going through personally. You know, a part of me feels like they just see a student who was just slacking and just not doing the schoolwork. And I was in pretty good classes. Like, it was like honors math, science, and history. But it was like, for me at the time, it was like all too much. Like, it was just way too much to take in.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of those courses could have hours of homework a
yeah.
night. So it's not something you do your homework at school. You were in the higher classes, and seventh grade hits. And
but like the students were, for me, it was very brutal. The school buses going to school were completely packed. My school had a lot of students. Like the middle school.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Butler.
Butler.
And the middle school had three floors. So it was huge. Well, the school buses were packed, and I couldn't find a seat. Kids would try to kick me off the seat, basically, and there would be instances where kids would push me, and they would sit on me. And wow. There was instances where I actually had to sit on the floor, and I was sitting on my book bag on the floor.
Wow.
And it was very hard for me to go through that.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, dealing with huge changes in your family, the loss of your mom, and now you're battling on the bus in seventh grade.
Yeah, and my dad made T-shirts for us as a tribute to my mother's passing, and each of them say different qualities of my mom. Like one of them said that she was courageous, another one said that she was beautiful and funny, or whatever sort of quality, I can't remember exactly, but mine
said that my mom was beautiful. And it was pink to represent the breast cancer ribbon. And I wore it to school, and people laughed at me. They didn't understand.
Yeah.
And it was really hard. Like, people were like, what are you wearing? What's this supposed to mean?
Yeah. Schools can be brutal places.
Yeah, because people make assumptions. Oh, this guy's a mama's boy. And
they didn't even know what happened.
They didn't know.
Yeah. And so we place people in community settings that are not really communities. They have no idea what, you know, and I can only imagine how difficult that was.
It was really hard.
Yeah. So how'd you overcome things like that?
Shrug it off.
Shrug it off.
That's literally how. I didn't go to anybody or told anyone about my issues. I grew very quiet and just, I wouldn't say cold per se, but I made myself feel like I'm better than these people who are making fun of me. These people are just trying to destroy me, and I want to come out as the guy who stood strong. And I just tried to make myself feel as if I was better than what other people portray themselves as.
Now, you know, there's no way for me, just as you're talking, but you draw a picture of at seventh grade, somebody who would become detached. Mm-hmm. You know, in order to rise above, I'm just going to be better than these people. I'm not going to let it hurt me anymore. I'm just going to separate myself from that. I'm going to be quiet.
It's like isolation.
And it's important for people to be watching, you know, because how does somebody in seventh grade deal with a loss? Accidental things can happen that develop these things. And you know, we're designed for connection. And so, you know, coming to the place where you decide you have to draw back, you know, and become quiet. I don't know what that does for you long term. You know, maybe we don't have time to talk about it today, but it's important for people to realize, you know, that's one thing that you're able to share that some other people out there grieving at a very young age might be dealing with.
And I still have those tendencies to this day of just being quiet and kind of isolating myself. And, you know, it's hard.
Yeah. And again, you know, you're doing good at 22. You know, I want to let the audience know that, you know, because some people don't have the ability to articulate these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's so important what you share. Yeah, but these were all parts of this experience. This was a difficult one.
Christian Counseling Associates is ready to serve you, providing a wide range of counseling services. Christian counseling is accessible to everyone. We serve both Christians who want their faith integrated into the counseling process or those holding any beliefs or attitudes toward spirituality. With many years of counseling experience, our counselors are professional, licensed, highly trained, and rooted in their commitment to their church and communities. CCA is able to provide a full range of clinical counseling services. For more information, visit our website at www.ccawpa.com.
Other stories like that, things that just stand out to you as being hurdles, you know, turning points.
I had a girlfriend in Latrobe.
What grade is this? Because we're going from seventh grade to somewhere
so
else.
In seventh grade, I was at Butler. Eighth grade is when I moved to Latrobe because my dad got remarried.
Okay.
And, you know, it's in 10th grade, I was dating a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And when we broke up, she accused me of abusing her.
Oh, my.
And she told people that I shoved her into lockers.
Okay.
And let me just tell you this whole thing because people are probably questioning, what is this all about? So we would be walking in the hallway. And she started this sort of this love bump. You know, we'd hit each other with our hips. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
I've never done maybe
a couple times. But, you know, we
bump hips.
Yeah, you know.
It's like a playful bumping of hips.
But we did that.
And
energetic teenagers.
You know, we started doing that at the lockers. And when it started annoying her, I continued to do it. But I wouldn't say that I tried to harm her or even remotely hurt her in any way. I mean, it was just a soft bump. But I'm assuming that I annoyed her to the point that she just didn't want to date me anymore, and she broke up. People asked why. Mm-hmm. And she told people that I shoved her in the lockers and I pushed her. And people they portrayed this certain image of me. This kid's no good. He's a bully, is what a lot of people tried to portray me as.
He's abusing women.
Yeah, I'm abusing women. You know, yeah. It's no.
and you were at a new school, pretty much. I mean,
yeah,
you didn't grow up in
new
Latrobe.
School.
It must have been devastating.
And yeah, it was really, it really impacted me in high school. And I couldn't even go to the lunchroom because my friend group was the friend group that my girlfriend was in. Hmm. And
so you lost all those friends.
Yeah, I lost all my friends for a certain period of time. And in that time, instead of going to lunchroom, I went to the band room. And I practiced playing guitar. Mm. And I can argue right now that that's why I had such a passion to play guitar and why I was so good. Yeah. It was a way for me to cope just as the same as me playing the piano. It was just not to cope over my mother, but rather these accusations that people were throwing on me in high school.
And at each point, I really see that you developed a way, you made some choices, you know, you were blessed, you know, to have some outlet that helped you.
Yeah.
So in this instance, you can't go to the lunchroom. You know, there's nowhere for you to eat, so you had the ability to go and play guitar. And the only thing that I would bring up that I think about with these stories is that there's people who go through similar things that have no outlet.
Yeah.
They get backed into a corner, and like these things are happening all over the place, where people just freak out. You know, that's how intense what you're describing is.
It's important to find a hobby.
Yeah, because I mean,
something that just releases that pain.
I mean, it's important to realize too. You know, this is not just like, oh, you know, this thing happened with your girlfriend. Now what is a serious accusation?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, breaking up and the things that happen and people who are maybe not mature enough to even get into that kind of dating relationship. But at the same time, your dad is remarried.
Yeah.
And you've moved. Like all these huge changes.
A bunch of new changes.
Yeah, so I can only imagine, you know, how those things were. But you describe it like, hey, I dealt with it. I learned how to play guitar. You're not saying like I was the happiest kid in the world, you know, but you really were resilient in those things. I mean, I listen to some of this and we get the sense it could destroy somebody, you know. And it wasn't like, you know, out of anybody's fault. I mean, these are just things that happen in life.
Yeah, I can't remember how old I was, but I was in 10th grade. I had to be like 15 years old at least, 15, 16. And, you know, there's mistakes that I made, but also accusations that were overblown by other 15, 16-year-olds. And, you know, things just escalated. When I feel like they could have been easily avoided if everybody was just in their 30s.
Yeah. And let me tell you, now that you're in adult land, adults act this way too, for sure, in their 30s, 40s, 50s. You know, you get into this family dynamic where what you're describing that I believe was really important, and I'm sure that you have some stories that contradict this, but you had people who were intentionally loving in your family, realized the gravity of the situation, and were providing repairable moments, healing moments, and supporting you. I definitely...
Yeah, there's people that don't change. You know, I work with a bunch of... No, I'm just joking.
Well, but, and that's the world, you know?
But there is growth in certain areas that, you know, I could look at somebody and say this person's most certainly not acting like someone from high school. Some people change and some people don't, but not everybody's, you know, obnoxious and just completely...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so...
Because high school is like a jungle.
That's a very, nice, not nice, kind way to look at people, forgiving. And, maybe past the scope of our meeting today to understand how that develops through all of this, but you really picked up a lot of stuff from having to go through these things. And that was a big deal in 10th grade.
Yeah, me and this girl that accused or just said that I pushed her, we're friends on Facebook. We're still friends.
Friends now?
In fact, whenever I got cheated on by my most recent girlfriend, that girlfriend from high school actually picked me up and we went for a drive just to talk about it. So we still get along. I forgive her.
Yeah.
But it's like...
Yeah, and for everybody out there who's maybe thinking this went another way, you would say that to our audience to let the community know, like, there was reconciliation. She trusts you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you didn't mean to bump her too hard.
No, I don't think I bumped her, hard enough to leave bumps and bruises, but
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And some of our listeners out there are not dealing with grief; they're dealing with abuse, and they have been abused by people. So we recognize that,
and
this wasn't one of those.
Yeah,
cases.
I didn't try to defend myself in any way, because if a girl in high school is accusing me of something, who's going to believe me? Nobody.
Nobody believed you.
Nobody would believe me. So I didn't want to escalate anything or just.
Yeah, you were the one in the band room, not the...
Yeah, I didn't want to make my statement or anything like that, because it just would have stirred the water. I just wanted to let things die down in peace, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's obvious to me that you make this decision that you described. You made a decision for Jesus Christ. You opened yourself to ministry in the church. And that's become part of how you deal with all of this. Mm-hmm. Could you describe how that took place? How you sought help and support through all of this?
Wait, what was the question?
Well, so, if you, at all of this time where you had to overcome these things at some point, because the way you describe it now, like you describe it in very Christian terms. You're growing in your ability to understand things that way. And I would say, again, as an expert and just knowing you, you're doing really well with this. It doesn't mean that anybody here is perfect, but you're growing your ability to deal with life. Mm-hmm. And that's, looking back in this grief, that, this huge thing that happens, loss of a parent, we wonder how people are going to deal with this. It's so tough.
Yeah.
I believe that you've been blessed and being able to do that. But now, as an adult, you're looking back and you're building off of that. Mm-hmm. That starts with you being open to this radio show. Your friend ministers to you.
Mm-hmm.
You decide to say, the way I'm going to deal with this is by God's design.
Yes.
I'm going to follow Jesus. And so the question is, how did that happen, for you? Okay, so after the decision, what did you do then, to where you are now and the way that you tell us about this? How did that happen for you?
All right, this is kind of what I want to talk about, because this is how I overcame my porn addiction. So I was on Discord, and I don't know if you know what Discord is.
I have no idea.
It's a social media app for texting, group chats.
Discord.
A lot of people use it for video games and all sorts of stuff and communities. So I was in this Daily Wire Discord, and I met this girl, and she was nice and kind. She was beautiful. And we had a very, very similar past. Like, it was crazy similar in such a way where it's like, were we in the same household? Like, it was just, like, so similar. And I told her that, you know, I want to get to know her. I like her. And she told me she was all the way from Canada. All the way up in Canada. And
the girlfriend from Canada online. I just say that because that's... sorry.
But I met this girl, and whenever Pastor Chris at, you know, Charter Oak Church, he was doing this sermon about Matthew 5.
So you go to Charter Oak Church in Greensburg. Pastor Chris Whitehead was giving a message.
Yes, he was giving a message. And before the message, the day prior, this girl was talking about how one of her exes was watching porn. And she was talking about how she felt so betrayed, so torn. And after watching and listening to Pastor Chris Whitehead talking in Matthew 5 about adultery, I felt very convicted about what I've been doing for like 10 years.
So if you look at a woman with lust,
yes,
you've already committed adultery. And you heard the pastor saying this. Hit you.
And it hit me. So I texted her and I told her what I have been doing for years. And then she stopped talking to me. She kind of like ghosted me. She didn't say why. And in that time, I was praying to God, and I prayed for four nights, and I was crying, and I was in all sorts of tears, and I was just asking God for him to just get rid of this desire from me, this porn addiction. And I asked him to have it be his will and not my own. A few days later, you know, I was asking him, is this the girl that you want me to be with? So a few days later, I was cleaning up my grandma's apartment because she no longer lives in her apartment. And this was really creepy. Like, this was like God telling me something. And in this apartment, he had, we found these coins, and there was a Canadian coin. So I thought that was really weird. Like, why does my grandma have a Canadian coin all the way in Pennsylvania?
So you find this just stray Canadian coin in your grandma's apartment, and it really symbolically means something.
Yes. You want to know what we did with the coin? Threw it away.
How come?
It was useless. Didn't need it. But there was another coin. It was a penny. You want to see the penny?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It has a cross engraved through it.
So you found a penny with a cross engraved into the center of it. So there's, if the, you know, for the people who could see us on video, it's a cross cut out into the center of the penny. You found this, threw away the Canadian coin, kept this. Tell me why. I mean, I've never seen that.
I never seen that either. So I thought that was very meaningful for me. And God was telling me something. So I originally thought that this girl was the one because I didn't want to travel that far. My original thought of my will versus God's will is that God's will is something that I don't want to do. That's not the case. Sometimes God's will could be the very thing that you're seeking.
But it comes down to what benefits him, what benefits the kingdom, what will grow discipleship, what will just make heaven cheer. That's basically what God's will looks like. So I originally thought that before I found the penny, that this was God's will for me to pursue this girl. Mm-hmm. But after I found the penny, I knew what I had to do. So I told this girl this story about the penny and the Canadian coin. And I asked her, I said, would you rather be with a Christian guy who's on fire for Christ, who's willing to sacrifice everything, or with somebody else? And she unfriended me on everything.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
A clear sign.
In researching out different places to go in my internship, I've been in a pastoral position for many years, and I have a lot of experience coming in, but not in the counseling profession. So coming here, I was able to integrate my faith and my biblical principles into the counseling practice. In an environment that was very supportive and encouraging, I was able to use the techniques and the modalities that I learned in my counseling school as evidence-based practices and have the faith integrated into those. And that was so important to me because my faith informs how I live. So this was a necessity for me in my internship and in my future to be able to put that into my practice. In the internship process, it's a wonderful opportunity to grow and expand your knowledge and put into practice what you've learned. My experience has been wonderful. It's been a great, awesome experience. I feel supported. I feel encouraged. I feel that I'm given opportunities to grow further in my career and in my faith also. So that's very important too. I've had a great experience at Christian Counseling Associates. You can too. Come grow with us.
So this whole thing happens at your grandmother's apartment.
Mm-hmm.
You find the Canadian coin, you find the coin with a cross. You were praying for this.
Yeah, I was praying for answers, and I was praying for Christ to get rid of my desires.
You go back to this person who you're online with from Canada. You're thinking like, man, this is it, mm-hmm. and I'm going to Canada, and you know, but I got to tell her about like what's in my heart. Like, look, I'm a committed believer Christian, and that's important to me. I want to tell you about it.
Yeah, a big part of me is very. I want to tell people the truth. Yeah. I'm very.
If you're gonna
hard
be
on truth,
yeah.
And some people say, don't get too truthful. People don't know you all that much. You're sharing too much. But I don't know. Just
yeah. So you know, one value that I'd put out here, and what we're doing today, yeah. So Alex, you know, people are gonna watch this, you know, in your context, your family, you know, our small group, the church, you know, and you're doing exactly what God's design is. And that is being transparent. We want to share things of the heart. And then there's accountability. Like now that I know all this stuff happened in you, you know, you have people who watch over you. And that's what families do. That's what the church family does. That's what communities are supposed to do. It doesn't really happen too much anymore, you know. But people will watch over you once they hear what your heart is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you know, today I guess it's fashionable. Oh, don't share too much. It's opposite in the church. It's not easy.
Yeah.
And so that's been all today. Like, I know all this stuff about you now, and it's to your advantage.
Yeah, my.
Yeah, but maybe not in this relationship. So,
yeah,
so you shared this with her, and she says, that's it.
Mm-hmm. I texted my friend Ryan just to come back to the truthfulness. My friend Ryan was just letting me know if I was to speak brutal truth, my enemies will use that against me. And I texted Ryan back and I said, if they attack me for speaking nothing but truth,
then that's the devil telling me that God is very proud of what I'm doing.
Yeah, you like want God to be proud of you.
He's very, can't think of the word, but he's very happy that I'm sharing my experiences.
I'm glad too. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I would say that's what we encourage and train people to do here, that the transparency and accountability process is key to overcoming life challenges and trusting people and being in relationship with people that way. That's a very counseling-like relationship.
Yes.
It's healing. You know, so you prayed about this. Yeah, you know, this the Canadian coin and the penny with the cross comes up. And to you, this means I need to be transparent with my girlfriend and see if she values this, that she can accept this.
She was never a girlfriend. We were just talking for like 2 months or
so. So it was just like online
relationship. Yeah, we knew each other for like 2 months in the chat, but we haven't really started talking till like, I want to say like 3 weeks. Around there, we voice chatted and we talked.
Yeah.
But
yeah. So there was some things that obviously like big things that came through prayer during this time.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
I prayed for God to get rid of my desires, and just like that, the Spirit just took hold of me, and I have no desire to watch porn at all. You know, I haven't watched porn. And I want to say at least a month.
Oh my. Well, you know, what you're saying is also people are going to doubt this. You know, that you had a habit, something you do all the time,
mm-hmm.
and you have prayed this, you know, to be lifted off of you, you know, to know what to do with it, and you experienced just like a snap of a finger that...
Yeah, it literally felt... I don't think I've ever experienced anything like it before.
Yeah.
It's just like I don't even think about it before bed, like at all. It's just completely gone.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, and what I would say about that is I like to tell a story. When I was 19, I went to a Billy Graham crusade, and I clearly heard God speak to me that I was to give my life to Him, and Billy Graham was calling from, I was at that time Three River Stadium, and calling to come down to the altar and give your life to the Lord, and I did, and I experienced that in an instant my mind had changed, and everything that I knew in my life was that I had set as goals and things I was involved with, I knew was wrong for me. However, it took a long time for those things to change, like to get myself out of that. And that's also an experience that people have, you know. So I believe, you know, that snap of a finger, you know, in psychology and learning about, like, there's nothing else. There's no medication. There's no intervention, counseling. Mm-hmm. You know, what happened in my mind was so instant.
It's weird, ain't it? Like, it felt really...
Yeah. you're describing something similar, you know, and what I would say, like, from here, you know, that is something, you know, that you share with people as a witness and allow people to hold you accountable.
Yes.
You know, that's so pervasive nowadays, the images that we see. Mm-hmm. You know, what is coming through a tablet, through a phone, everywhere that you look, these pornographic images, and you're making a decision, I'm not doing that. It clicked in your mind, you know it's from the Lord, and yeah, there's people who don't get away from that, and you've heard God say, here's the way.
Yeah.
And that happened through prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And
I have a letter that I'd like to read. It's a letter from my mom. So I typed it in on my phone because it was originally handwritten on paper.
Okay, so you don't have the paper.
The paper. It's in cursive. It's kind of hard to read a little bit, but I have it typed in just for some clarification. She wrote this back in 2011.
And I did not read it until probably 5 or 6 months ago.
Okay.
So this is what my mom wrote to me. "Dear Alex, I know that you are probably the most affected by what I say. You are such a precious boy. I know you're sad, but be happy for me. It's okay to cry, but you need to laugh. You need to know that mommy is happy and okay. Nothing will ever harm me. Take comfort in this. Keep your love and interest in Jesus and the Bible. Don't fall away. Stay on the path to heaven. Remember that Jesus is your Lord and Savior, and He is the only way. I need you with me in heaven forever. Remember all the things that you and me talked about doing. I know your heart, and I believe you will lead a lot of people to Christ. So be strong.
Thanks for reading that. That's a wonderful letter.
Thanks. And I view this podcast episode as a sort of 10-year anniversary.
It's been 10 years.
And like I said, I didn't read this till maybe like 5 or 6 months ago, and I turned myself over to Christ probably, 2 years ago. So I don't view this letter as a reason for me to be a Christian, because I was a Christian before reading this, but that letter definitely motivates me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, praise God for that, that your mom left that for you.
Yeah.
And it's just wonderful to have you share this with us. You know, I know that there's a lot of people who grieve out there. We have a foundation. It's called the Jamie Cordial Hall Foundation. And Jamie, the person who owns the building that we're in, his daughter lost her life after childbirth from an illness, and had the family was unbelievably devastated, and to this day, like with you, 10 years later, some of this just never goes away.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's grief. There's a sense of loss. And there's things that have been overcome, and hope, and ways you move into the future. You don't forget about this though. And so, so anybody who's grieving, they've developed a fund in memory of Jamie, and so when people come here who have lost a family member, they receive a grant for their counseling, and we tell that story of how much the family loved her and cared about her, and how they want to let people know who are grieving that they are cared for by God and by the community. And that letter that your mom wrote is an enduring way, to know that you're cared about and that God cares about you. And it's just a wonderful thing. And I hope that our folks out there who are grieving will be able to get in touch with that too. And if there's somebody out there alone or feeling alone, like it many times that you did, we would love them to reach out to us. If there's nobody else, we would be with you and be honored to talk with you. And it's been an honor to talk to you today, Alex.
Thanks.
And have you come in. Would it be okay? We have our guests pray for the folks out there. We'd say a prayer for people who are grieving.
Yeah.
Would you feel comfortable to pray?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, please.
Lord, I pray to you today to help guide those who are suffering through the loss of a loved one. Satan wants them to fall off track. Many people just seek these worldly desires of pornography and just all sorts of awful
instances. Some people have the tendency to want to harm themselves and want to just run away from you, Lord. But I just pray that you can help them understand and realize that you are the way, you are the truth, you are the life, you are the freedom. And in Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Amen. Thanks for being with us today, Alex. Thank you for sharing.
It's an honor.